Think about how you usually approach decorating for a holiday. For most of us, the strategy is pretty linear.
Right. It's very straightforward.
Yeah, you know, you pick a Saturday, you haul all the boxes up from the basement, and you just spend hours putting everything up all at once.
And then you're done.
Exactly, you're done. The house is completely transformed, and it looks incredibly festive for that one big day. But when you apply that that one-and-done strategy to Hanukkah, the entire system just breaks down.
Oh, it completely collapses under its own weight. I mean, the structure of the celebration is just fundamentally different.
Right, because Hanukkah isn't building up to a single morning. It's a party that runs for 8 consecutive nights.
Which changes everything.
It really does. And what usually happens is that you basically blow your entire decorating budget and, like, all of your creative energy on night one.
Oh, yeah, we've all done it.
Right, so the house looks fantastic on that first Friday. But imagine you get to night 6. The novelty has completely worn off. The kids are used to it. The momentum of the week is just dragging. And that shiny blue foil garland you spent an hour hanging just, well, it just looks like furniture. It basically becomes invisible.
It really does. It just fades into the background noise of the house. And when you think about the core theme of the holiday,
which is increasing light.
Exactly. It's supposed to be about increasing light and ascending joy. Yeah. So having your family's excitement just kind of flatline halfway through the week is a massive missed opportunity.
Yeah.
We tend to front load the experience and then we just leave nothing in reserve for the finish line.
Well, that is the exact trap we are dismantling for you today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We are building a comprehensive 8-night master plan for Hanukkah.
And we've got some great material to work with.
We do. We're pulling from a highly practical, incredibly detailed guide created by Leila Farahani. She is a cultural celebration specialist at Party Boutiques in Thornhill, Ontario.
And her approach is so valuable because she takes these ancient, deeply rooted traditions and actually maps them directly onto the practical logistics of a modern household.
Which is what we all need.
Right. Like she looks at budgets, spatial planning, and even family psychology.
So we're going to build this step by step. We'll figure out how to optimize your decor budget over the full 8 days, how to maintain the magic with a strategic schedule of nightly additions, and we're going to solve the puzzle of dual holiday setups.
That's the tricky part.
It is. Because whether you are trying to host a serene Shabbat dinner and a lively Hanukkah celebration on the exact same dining table, or you are trying to negotiate a peace treaty between a Christmas tree and a menorah in the same living room.
The border war.
Right, the border war. The logistics require a real plan.
And that plan has to start with a spatial strategy. I mean, before we can even look at pacing the 8 nights, we need to build the foundation of the room.
Okay.
Because Leila points out that Hanukkah demands a completely different physical layout than almost any other celebration.
Let's test that out, actually. Because if I am setting up for a kid's birthday party in my living room, my instinct is to pick the biggest, blankest wall right.
Naturally.
I put up a banner, maybe a balloon arch, and I arrange everything so that when guests walk into the room, they're looking inward at that focal point. But it sounds like you're saying Hanukkah doesn't work that way.
No, it operates on the exact opposite geometric principle.
Really?
Yeah. A birthday party faces inward to create this enclosed, private celebration, but Hanukkah is mandated to face outward.
Oh, right, of course.
So Leila introduces this concept of the standing set. This is your base layer of decor. It goes up before you light the first candle, and it stays totally untouched until December 13th.
But you don't anchor it on a blank interior wall.
No, you anchor it at the window.
So you are treating the front of your house almost like a retail storefront display.
Yeah.
You know, you're designing it for the neighbors walking by rather than just the people sitting on the sofa.
That is exactly the historical design brief. Leila actually traces this back to the Talmud, specifically Shabbat 21b, which dictates that the menorah must be placed adjacent to the public domain.
Right, to proclaim the miracle.
Exactly. The fundamental purpose of the lights is to proclaim that miracle to the outside world. So because of that outward-facing mandate, your entire room design starts at the glass and works its way backward into the house.
Wow, that drastically changes where you spend your money.
It really does.
If the window is the anchor, you have to prioritize what frames it.
Hmm.
And Leila actually provides a very specific budget for this standing set, doesn't she?
She does.
She prices out a 7-piece foundation that comes to exactly $79.93 at her Thornhill shop.
Yeah, and it gives you complete coverage without feeling cluttered.
Okay, walk me through it.
So you start right at the glass with window clings for $7.99. Then you frame the entrance to the room with the door cover banner for $21.99. As you move inward, you drape a 36-inch blue and silver wood bead garland for $9.99. You hang a wooden Happy Hanukkah wall plaque for $14.99, and then you add a Star of David tinsel wreath for $17.99.
That's a lot of coverage.
It is. And then you just finish the smaller surfaces with a $2.99 wall sign and a $3.99 pack of gold and white Star of David confetti for the mantle.
When you look at the economics of that, it's actually incredibly efficient. Because Layla notes that a fully decorated middle-tier Hanukkah, which includes this $80 standing set, plus the nightly additions we're going to talk about, totals out at $133.84 for the entire week.
Yeah, and compare that to their event guides for a standard 20-guest kids' birthday party.
Right.
A single afternoon birthday runs about $160.80 just in decor alone.
Wow, so a week-long holiday is significantly cheaper than a three-hour birthday party.
Which is wild to think about.
I suppose that is the benefit of the standing set. You're leveraging the same surfaces day after day. The architecture of the room does the heavy lifting, so you don't have to keep buying, you know, massive volume.
Exactly. It is entirely about scalability. You are investing in a static backdrop.
But wait, that static backdrop is exactly where I see a problem.
How so?
If this $80 standing set goes up on Friday and just sits there completely untouched for over a week, we are right back to the invisible furniture issue.
Ah, yes.
I mean, if I am a 7-year-old, I am thrilled on night one, but by Tuesday, I don't even notice the tinsel wreath anymore. So how do we prevent that visual fatigue?
Well, you are hitting on the critical vulnerability of an 8-day holiday. And it brings us to the second and arguably most important phase of Layla's strategy, which is the nightly add-on schedule.
Okay.
This is how you pace the week so the excitement actually builds rather than decays.
So we are intentionally holding things back. We aren't putting everything out on the first night.
Oh, definitely not. We are adding one small item per night, and those items must ascend in value.
Ascend in value.
Yes. And this isn't just a clever modern parenting hack. It's deeply rooted in the philosophy of the holiday.
Really?
Yeah. The school of Hillel, as recorded in the Talmud, argued that we must increase the count of candles each night rather than starting with 8 and counting down. The guiding principle is one elevates to a higher level in matters of sanctity and one does not downgrade.
Wow, one elevates to a higher level. So the architecture of the week has to climb. We are constructing a literal escalation of joy.
Beautifully put, yes. If you give the kids a mountain of expensive gifts on night one, human nature dictates that night 8 is going to feel like a massive anticlimax.
You've downgraded the experience.
Exactly. Instead, Layla maps out an 8-night schedule of small additions that totals just $43.92. That averages out to a highly manageable $5.49 a night.
Okay, walk me through this escalation, because how do you stretch $43 over a week and actually keep a kid's attention?
You start with a very low baseline. So night 1 is a Happy Hanukkah pen for $2.99. Night 2, you bring in a blue wooden dreidel for $3.99. Night 3 is a Star of David squishy, also $3.99.
Okay, I have to pause you right there.
Sure.
I see the logic of starting small to build momentum, but a pen. Even a festive one. I mean, if my kid has been watching toy commercials all through November and they come down on night 1 of a major holiday to find a $3 piece of stationery, we are going to have a mutiny on our hands. A pen is a pen.
Well, it is, which is why Layla leans heavily into what she calls the gift bag trick.
The gift bag trick.
Yeah, you don't just hand them a loose pen. She suggests buying a stack of plain, cohesive Hanukkah gift bags, which run about $1.99 each. You place that $3 pen inside the bag with some tissue paper.
A racked pen is still a pen, though.
Yeah.
I mean, once they open the bag, the illusion is broken. You're going to have a very underwhelmed child.
Only if you haven't managed their expectations beforehand.
Oh, okay.
The gift bag trick works in tandem with resetting the family's baseline. If they expect a video game console, a bag won't save you. But if you communicate clearly that the 8 nights are about small daily discoveries tokens of the holiday, the packaging changes the psychology of the reveal.
That makes sense.
It transforms a tiny utilitarian item into an event. The suspense of opening the dedicated bag each night is half the value.
I see. So you are creating a ritual out of the unwrapping itself, so the physical object inside doesn't have to carry all the weight of their excitement.
Precisely. And because you started at that $3 baseline, as their attention naturally drifts later in the week, you have room to escalate.
Right.
On night 4, you alter the standing set by adding menorah and star wall decals for $3.99. Night 5 is a bag clip for $4.99.
Stepping it up.
Exactly. Then you bring in the activities. Night 6 is a $7.99 coloring set. Night 7 is a $7.99 mosaic foam craft kit. And Night 8, the grand finale, is a $7.99 deck of Chinooka playing cards for the family to use together.
Wow, so you were intentionally starving the front half of the week to ensure the back half feels abundant.
It's all about pacing.
It is a brilliant way to manipulate the momentum. But if we are escalating the gifts and the tradition dictates we escalate the light, we are naturally escalating our resource consumption.
Yes, we are.
Which sounds like a logistical trap waiting to happen by the end of the week.
Oh, it is the single biggest mathematical trap of the holiday. Layla calls it the Night 4 illusion, and it catches people off guard every single year.
I can imagine.
It all comes down to the candle math.
Okay, let's run the numbers. A standard box holds 45 candles, correct?
Yes. And a single menorah requires 44 candles over the 8 nights.
Right.
You use 36 for the nightly lights, because you add one each evening. And you need 8 for the shamash, which is the helper candle used to light the others. So a 45-count box covers one menorah perfectly with a single spare in case one breaks.
So if I have a full box, where's the illusion?
The illusion happens when you assess your inventory halfway through the week. Imagine you are hosting. You light the candles on Monday, which is night 4. You are exactly halfway through the timeline of the holiday. You glance at your box of candles to see if you need to buy more, and it looks practically full.
Because mathematically, I've only used a few each night. One on the first night, 2 on the second.
Exactly. By the time you finish lighting on night 4, you have only burned 14 candles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You have used just 31% of the box to get through 50% of the holiday. So your brain does a quick visual calculation and says, I have 2/3 of my box left. I am totally fine.
But the consumption curve goes vertical in the back half.
It goes completely vertical. Nights 6, 7, and 8 require 24 candles between them.
That's crazy.
More than half the entire box is consumed in just those final 3 evenings. So the host who trusted their visual estimate on Monday finds themselves completely out of candles by Thursday at 6 p.m.
It is literally the marathon runner who drinks all their water in the first 10 miles because they feel great, only to realize the final 6 miles are entirely uphill.
Such a good analogy.
And realizing you are out of candles on a Thursday night brings up an even bigger logistical nightmare, especially when we look at the specific calendar for 2026.
Oh, yeah. The 2026 calendar is incredibly demanding. Hanukkah begins at sundown on Friday, December 4th, and ends at nightfall on Saturday, December 12th.
So it is bookended by 2 Fridays.
Yeah.
Night 1 and Night 8 both fall on a Friday, which means they crash directly into Shabbat.
It is a massive collision of timing and space. On Friday, the Hanukkah candles must be lit before sundown and, crucially, before the Shabbat candles are lit.
Oh, so you're rushing.
You are rushing to do this early, usually while the kitchen is still in absolute chaos with dinner prep.
And beyond the timing, you have a real estate problem. Most families don't have a separate dining room for Shabbat and a different room for Hanukkah.
No, definitely not.
You were using one table for 2 distinct observances at the exact same time. If my instinct is to protect the elegance of Friday night dinner, but also celebrate night 1 of Hanukkah, how do I set that table without it looking disjointed?
Well, Layla's primary rule for the dual table is to avoid the thematic tablecloth.
Avoid completely.
Completely. If you throw down a massive, classic, bright blue table cover covered in cartoon dreidels, you instantly erase the traditional dignity of Shabbat.
Yeah, makes sense.
It transforms a serene family dinner into what visually reads as a children's party.
You completely lose the sensory experience of Friday night. The crispness of the linens, the exposed wood of a nice table.
Exactly. You want to maintain that grounding. First solution is to use a table runner instead.
A runner.
Yeah. A runner provides a defined linear strip of holiday theme down the center, but it leaves the exposed mahogany of your table or a crisp white linen underneath entirely visible.
So it acts as an accent rather than a dominant theme. It allows the formal dinner setting to breathe.
She recommends a Star of David runner for $24.99 or a 108-inch menorah runner for $39.99 for larger tables.
Nice.
It whispers Hanukkah. It gives the menorah a beautifully staged platform, but it respects the established aesthetic of Shabbat.
So that solves the identity crisis for the dining room table. But for a lot of families in 2026, the dining room is the easy part.
Oh, here we go.
The real challenge is the living room, specifically for blended households or diverse families who are trying to manage Hanukkah and Christmas in the exact same shared space.
The Christmas and Hanukkah border war. It is a very complex design challenge. You have two highly visual, culturally significant holidays demanding attention in one family room.
Well, if I have a massive glowing green tree in the corner adorned with red ornaments, my instinct would be to buy multicolored Hanukkah decorations so everything just blends into one giant festive holiday aesthetic.
That is the instinct for many people, and Layla strongly advises against it.
Really? Why?
Because if you try to blend them into a single holiday soup, the room just looks visually chaotic. You end up with a space that feels like a confused toy store.
Okay, so what's the alternative?
She recommends a strict spatial approach. You establish distinct territories. The menorah owns the window, as tradition dictates, and the tree owns the corner. You need a minimum of 8 feet of physical separation between them.
You are drawing a literal demilitarized zone across the living room rug.
Basically, yes.
But even with physical distance, they are in the same sightline. Mm-hmm. How do you stop them from clashing?
The secret is a ruthless control over your color palette. Christmas inherently commands red and green. Hanukkah runs blue, white, and a metallic. The golden rule for a shared space is that you must pick only one metallic for the Hanukkah side.
Why limit it to just one? If the tree has gold and silver, why can't the window?
Because the human eye can only process so much contrast before a space feels stressful.
That makes sense.
If your living room features red, green, blue, white, silver, and gold, all competing simultaneously, the colors fight each other, it creates visual anxiety. But by restricting the Hanukkah decor to strictly blue, white, and either silver for a modern, icy look, or gold for a warm candlelight feel, you give it a distinct, unified visual identity. It can stand strong across the room from the red and green tree without clashing.
You are giving each tradition its own visual vocabulary. That is incredibly smart. And looking at the 2026 calendar, there is actually a slight reprieve for these households.
There is, because Hanukkah concludes on December 12th. The overlap with peak Christmas season is relatively brief.
Right.
You can maintain those strict borders for the first half of the month, and then once the menorah is put away, the tree can essentially reclaim the room for the remaining weeks.
Although I am sure there are families who simply don't have the floor space for strict borders or who just don't want to take the design rules that seriously.
And Layla accounts for them too. For households that prefer a sense of humor over rigid spatial planning, party boutiques offers a Krismukka banner kit for $14.99.
That's amazing.
Yeah, some families just want to lean into the beautiful chaos of the overlap and string it all together.
I appreciate that they offer a product for the rebels who just want to embrace the collision. Well, if you're listening to this and realizing that your 8-night strategy needs a serious overhaul, whether it is upgrading to a standing set or fixing your candle math, you need to know where to actually get these supplies.
And you cannot afford to leave it to the last week of November.
Absolutely not. You can visit Party Boutiques in person. They are located at 7724 Young Street in Thornhill.
And you can also view their full inventory online at partyboutiques.ca.
Yes, but one important logistical note. Their online checkout is currently turned off. So the best workflow is to browse the site, build your list, and then call them directly at 365-556-0536.
And they will pull your items and have your order waiting for you at the counter.
Perfect.
And if you take nothing else away from Layla's master plan, please remember this. Buy your candles in November and buy a spare box.
Good advice.
You can improvise a gift bag or a table runner. But if you fall victim to the night four illusion and run out of candles on a Thursday night, the plain blue and white boxes are the very first things to sell out citywide.
Secure the spare box, people. As we wrap up this deep dive, we have covered a massive amount of practical ground. From the geometry of the living room to the psychology of a $3 pen. But stepping back from the logistics, there is a fascinating tension in how this holiday is designed.
There really is. I mean, we spent the first half of this discussion talking about the outward mandate, the Talmudic requirement to put the menorah in the window to face the public domain.
It is a bold public declaration.
But then all the strategies we discussed for surviving the 8 nights, the pacing of the small gifts, the careful scheduling of activities to maintain the kids' joy, that is entirely internal.
Right.
It is a deeply private familial effort happening behind the glass.
It's a striking duality.
Yeah.
You are simultaneously managing a public performance of faith for the neighborhood and a private marathon of endurance and joy for your own children.
And it makes you wonder how often we struggle with that exact balance in our own lives, even outside the holidays.
Oh, absolutely. We put so much energy into our standing set, the public-facing version of our lives, our careers, our social media, ensuring it looks perfect to anyone walking by.
While completely neglecting the internal pacing required to sustain our own private joy.
Exactly. We build this beautiful window display, but we run out of fuel behind the scenes by Tuesday. It is a powerful reminder that the public light is important. But if you don't intentionally pace your private investments, you will burn out before the week is over. Cultivate your standing set, but make sure you save some of that magic for the people sitting inside the room with you.